Good morning and welcome to MTSU On the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. Everyone thinks that he or she can write the great American novel. Some of us don't have aspirations that are quite that lofty, but there's a budding writer or a would-be budding writer or a maybe you'd just like to be able to write a little bit better kind of writer inside practically everybody. And the Writer's Loft is a program here at MTSU that is designed to help people with all kinds of creative writing. And Terry Price is its director. He's here to talk with me today about that and how you too can either improve your writing skills or find an outlet for your creative expression, or both. Welcome, Terry.
Thank you, Jen. It's a pleasure to be here.
How do you sign up for the Writer's Loft, and what kind of format does it take?
Signing up for the Writer's Loft is incredibly easy. It is a non-degree certificate program, creative program, through Middle Tennessee State University. It's through the Department of Continuing Education. And right off the bat, I can tell you, you can go to the website, mtsu.edu/theloft. And there's a registration page there. It's very easy to sign up. The program itself, we do operate somewhat similar to an academic format, but we really are completely different. And the similar aspect is that we do go on semester basis. So right now we're in the middle of our spring semester, January through April. Then we'll have a summer semester, May through August, and then September through December. So we do operate on semesters, but we tell our students that this is not on an academic track. So if you are interested in writing, but you're also interested in obtaining a degree, whether it be a BA or a BS or a MA or an MFA, then you might want to consider other programs. This program is solely focused on helping you improve the craft of your writing. So anyone can take it, whether you have multiple degrees, whether you don't have a degree. It's ideally situated for people who currently work or have families. Because we have an orientation weekend, for example, in the middle of January, where we come together, we have lectures, we have panel discussions, we have readings. We also always have a featured author. This particular time we had K.L. Cook, who's a novelist and short story writer. We flew him in from Arizona. He made several presentations. We have a Friday night reception and a mixer. And then we match up the students one-on-one with a mentor. So you do have a personal relationship with a faculty member and a mentor who are published writers, and that's the person with whom you work during the entire semester. You don't sit in a classroom. You don't have to have an attendance. You literally write where you live. But it's different also from a distance learning course, or at least the traditional model, because you're not just sitting in front of a computer and sending in text and answers and so forth and receiving back sterile grades. There are no grades with the Writer's Loft. And that's another way we're different from a conventional academic track. We tell our students, I say, get out of the undergraduate mentality, which to me is, all right, I'm here. I want to get the highest grade I possibly can. What is it this professor really wants, and how can I please them? The Writer's Loft is always geared toward the student, always geared toward the writer. So there are no grades. We realize that art, in particular writing, is a subjective craft. And so what we say is, you come to us and tell us where you are, what kind of writing you want to do, whether it's a literary novel, short stories, cookbook, nonfiction, how-to book. We're getting ready to start tracks and blogging. Spiritual concept of writing. We're looking at screenwriting. Right now we have tracks for fiction, nonfiction, and poetry. If it's something you just want to dabble in and get a little bit better, if it's something that you really do have the urge to be published, we take you right where you are. You tell us what your goals are. We match you up with a mentor. You set up your agenda for that particular semester, and then you go home and you write. And you deliver three packets per semester. Packets will range depending on what genre. It could be anywhere from 15 pages to 30 pages worth of writing. And the mentor works with you one-on-one. We've actually had students who have gone through all three semesters. If you want a certificate with the program, you go through three semesters. That's 9 packets of material, 30 pages per packet. That's a book. So you can go through the entire program and come away with a book. We've also had a local author, Ron Furman, who only wanted to come one semester because he had written a nonfiction how-to book about retirement planning. And we worked with him for one semester. He completed his book, and he sold somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,000 to 12,000 copies of that book. So it's very flexible. It's designed and geared toward the writer. You made the comment about the great American novel. There was a comic this past weekend that I got a chuckle out of, and it showed someone at the keyboard, and the friend said, "Are you trying to write the great American novel?" And he says, "No, at this stage, I'll settle for the mediocre Canadian novel." So, you know,
I don't know how the Canadians would feel about that.
But, you know, we take you where you are, and we try to take you where you want to go. We actually have some people who go three semesters. They get their certificate, but they have found the program helpful enough that they come back for another semester. Again, it's not a conventional academic track. So we really do try to gear the program to improve the writer that you are, whether it's someone who dabbles here and there or someone who already knows some sense of craft, but needs a community, needs a one-on-one relationship to help hone and edit and revise the material so that they can send it out in the world.
So the student and the mentor work out a schedule that works for both of them. They can meet as often as they want or as little as they want?
Yes, and let me revise that. In writing, we revise a lot. Let me revise that a little bit. The schedule itself is relatively fixed. And I say relatively because we set deadlines for when you have to have the material to the mentor, when the mentor has to have the response back to the student. And we try to hold to that as closely as we can, simply because, generally speaking, if you are a writer and you're trying to be published, you will have deadlines. And so as a result, we feel that not only do we help the writer in terms of the craft of writing, but also to introduce you into the world of writing. So when you come to us, when you submit your material to the mentor, we make sure that it has appropriate margins, it's paginated properly, that it's that you get into the discipline of hitting your deadlines, having the material in a professional fashion, so that when you turn around and you submit to a journal or a magazine or a publisher or an agent or an editor, then perhaps they will look at it more closely and more seriously than they would someone who has no clue on how to do that. Now,
even if you're just writing for your own personal fulfillment,
absolutely,
and have no desire to become published, the requirements still apply.
They still apply. If someone came to me, and I do mentor in the program as well, if someone came to me and said, "I really don't have any desire to send this out ever and ever," then I probably would gear a little bit away from that. I would want them to at least be aware of the parameters of the requirements and so forth. Then if they make that decision that that's just not important, then certainly, again, in the undergraduate mentality, those things are important regardless. You don't catch a pass because you say, "I'm not going to be a physicist, so, you know, cut me some slack in this math." Mm-hmm. But in the writer's loft, again, since it is geared toward the student, then there would be some flexibility. Now, to be candid with you, I've been affiliated with the program for, this will be going on my 6th year, mm-hmm, and I've never had a student say that. So I guess it is conceivable, but I've not had that situation. Now, in terms of the semester outside of the deadlines, there is a great deal of flexibility between the mentor and the student. And so when they sit down at this orientation weekend, they cover what types of writing, where the student wants to go. Ideally, in 3 months, where would you like to be? What do you think that, what do you perceive to be the strongest aspect of your writing? Where do you perceive your weak points to be? And in some cases, students simply say, "I don't know enough." And so we take them from that point. But generally speaking, riders will have a feel for what is working, what's not working, or they'll have some vague sense. And so you then set up the what you're going to work on, what types of things you want to do. And sometimes you have students, again, full range, will come in and they will be already through a first draft of a novel. So we're actually helping them revise that novel. At the completely other end of the spectrum, sometimes we'll have students who say, you know, I've dabbled here and there, a few lines, a few paragraphs. We help them with exercises, things that build their craft muscles, so to speak, so that then they can go back and work on their own. The mentors meeting with the students, they will meet certainly during that orientation weekend. They will correspond and they will talk by telephone during the semester. It is up to the mentor and the student as to whether they actually physically meet during the semester. And the reason for that is we're fortunate enough, we've got the other program director, Charlotte Rains Dixon, who's also a mentor, lives in Portland, Oregon.
Uh-huh.
If you go to our website, once again, mtsu.edu/theloft, you'll see a list of our mentors. We have Betsy Woods, who's from Slidell, Louisiana, who does poetry and fiction and children's writing. We have, trying to think of our mentors, we have David Pierce, who is an adjunct here at MTSU, Alvin Knox, who's an adjunct here at MTSU. So they're local. I'm relatively local. Linda Busby Parker, who is a doctorate, and she is in Mobile, Alabama. So we do have mentors who travel here for our orientation weekend who come throughout the country. So in some cases, it's not physically possible to meet with the mentor during the semester. On occasion, I'll have a student that will say, that's important to me. I really would like to have someone that I can have a cup of coffee with. And so we assign them to a mentor where that's possible. In most cases, the student's more concerned with being matched up with someone who's compatible.
Can the student and the mentor email or IM as
yes.
much as they want?
Yes. And that, again, the student and the mentor set out on the front end the parameters. But no, we encourage that. And our mentors are wonderful in terms of communicating, trying to get right back with the student so that during this period of time when the student's at home producing this material, there's not a sense of isolation. In addition to that, as program directors, we're constantly sending out emails of encouragement, reminding of deadlines, encouraging students to email from one to another. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing that we do, not only in terms of helping you with regard to the craft of writing, but helping to immerse you into a community of writers so that you're not isolated. I think a lot of times as writers, we will be at our homes and you almost are embarrassed to tell someone you're a writer because they look at you askance. You know, well, what have you published? Well, you may be a published writer. You may not be a published writer, but you're still a writer.
We have a tendency to think in our capitalist society
yes.
that if you have not made a living at it, then you have not done it.
That's right. And I referred to the author K.L. Cook, who was here in January, and during one of his presentations, he made the comment that although he has done very well with his writing, he never wants to rely on his writing as his primary source of income. He's a professor at Prescott College in Arizona. And he does that intentionally because if you rely on your writing for your primary source of income, then you're beholden in some sense to someone or to some deadline or to some aspect. Whereas if you are not relying on it for your primary source of income, then you have the freedom to really write. And that's what the program is really about. Now, again, if someone comes to us and says, I want to get published, I want to be a commercial writer, you know, that's fine. And we will help them and teach them and try to gear them so they can go in that direction. But that's not the primary emphasis of the program.
Do you teach them anything about the business end of writing, how to get published, whether you should get an agent? What about people who try to scam you by saying, I'll get you published if you give me 50%
right.
of the take? Those people.
Sure.
People hang out at the Southern Festival of Books, which is a very, you know, august, well-respected.
It's a wonderful function and festival and has been alternating between Memphis and Nashville. And it's, I think it's for the time being, permanently in Nashville, and we're lucky to have it. But the answer is yes. These orientation weekends, which we refer to as a boot camp, so to speak, of at least 2 days and some days three, sometimes 3 days, where we come in at 8 or 8:30 in the morning and we generally finish up at 4 or 5 in the afternoon. We have breaks. But, I mean, it's just lectures and readings and panel discussions, and we will always have some sort of either question and answer with the author, or we'll bring in an agent or an editor. We'll have someone there to talk to the students about this very thing, and also we'll answer questions about that. And that's it's always a real source of curiosity by the students. They always want to know, you know, when do I get an agent? Do I need an agent? When do I approach an editor? You know, what about self-publishing? What about print on demand, which is very, very popular?
What about
nowadays?
E-books?
What about e-books?
Stephen King has already done an e-book.
Yes, he has. And, you know, the story in the USA Today this week about the brand new Kindle, the second edition of the Kindle by Amazon, which you can actually upload your own material to either Amazon, or you can email it to yourself in a Kindle, and it will actually format it so that it is published in terms of its appearance, and then you can send that around. So it's a completely different world now, and in some ways it's a little scary, but in some ways it's also very freeing, because there are a lot more opportunities out there for people to be published. You can start your own website, you can start your own web journal, and you can be published on the web immediately. And
the thing about the internet is, if you want to make money at it, what's the business model? And how do you make money at it?
Well, I think that, first of all, you have to get away from the notion of a business model, because there are so many different models in place nowadays. You know, certainly you can go the traditional route of finding an agent and then having an agent shop your book around. You can also go directly to a publishing house. You also have the print-on-demand industry, which, by the way, I might mention here that the Writer's Loft has partnered with Lightning Source, based out of Laverne, Tennessee, which is a subsidiary of the Ingram Corporation. And they will be helping us produce a journal. And so we're going to be actually publishing that. And that will consist of work not only from our students, but we're going to be soliciting work from all over. But that's going to be geared toward Middle Tennessee as far as the focus is concerned. But with that, you literally can have it published, and there's no inventory, mm-hmm. at least as far as physical. There is a virtual inventory.
Right.
So if someone requests 1,000 books today, they could have them 2 days from now.
You don't have to worry about having some storage shed somewhere
storage.
You have books stacked to the ceiling.
And the two other advantages, your book's never remaindered or put into a subcategory, and it never goes out of print. So you literally can be published, and forever and ever your book is out there, and anyone can order it at any particular time. So there are a lot of business models out there. I will say this, I actually received my certificate through the Writer's Loft a few years ago. I went on and got my MFA through Spalding University in Louisville, Kentucky, and am published. And I remember when I went through my MFA program, they asked me one of my goals. And I said, I really want to get published. And the advice that came back was, if that's your primary goal, we can help you do that. Mm-hmm. Why don't you make it your primary goal to write well? Because if you do that, then you will get published. If your focus is on getting published, well, we can get you published, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you'll be writing well. And I thought that was a nice way of telling me not to let the tail wag the dog. Mm-hmm. So we do put more emphasis on the craft of writing. We do talk about the business aspect of it. We do have people come in and talk to our writers about that. But we want to make sure that you don't get the cart before the horse.
The nice thing about writing and all of the other creative arts is that you're not considered a dilettante if it's not your full-time occupation. You can't dabble in nuclear physics. You're either in it all the way or you're not.
Right.
But anybody who wants to write essentially can be a writer.
Yes.
Some people will be better than others. Some people will have to practice more than others. With some people, if you're physically disabled, it might take more effort than others. But anybody can do it.
Yes. And I think that you referred earlier about our capitalist society. And I think that there is this notion of if you do something, you either have to make a living at it or it's perhaps, quote unquote, just a hobby. It's always just a hobby. And I don't believe in that. I believe that everyone is called to create. I really believe that we are all called to create, regardless of how we pursue that. And so not only should we look at writing as an art, which could perhaps be commercial, but I think writing is therapy. There are countless stories of people who process their lives through their art, whether it be painting or writing. John Gardner, who's passed away, was a brilliant professor, wrote lots of how-to books as far as writing, wrote some really nice novels. But when he was a child, he was riding on a tractor with his younger brother, and his brother fell off and went under the tractor and was killed.
Mm-hmm.
And John Gardner had nightmares about this every night of his life until he reached a point where he wrote a story about it. And through that story, through that writing, he processed that event in his life.
That was his catharsis.
That was his catharsis, and he never had a nightmare again. It helped him work through that. So I think that we are designed to create. I think that's the reason why when you have a conversation with someone and they say, what do you do? And I say, I do this and I do this and I'm a writer. And everyone will say, oh, you know, I either do that or I've written a journal or I'm halfway through a short story or I do poetry, you know, part time. Everyone seems to have written or is writing or says, you know, I've always wanted to do that. And I don't think that's an accident. I think that's something that's within us. And writing, I think, is generally more accessible because all you have to do is have a keyboard or a pencil and a piece of paper or chalk and a chalkboard. Whereas if you're a painter, you do have to have at least some of the media to be able to work with, or a sculptor or whatever. Writing is more accessible. So I think we all have the need to express ourselves through art. And I think there are a lot of reasons to accomplish that. And hopefully the Writer's Loft can help connect people to that and help them be able to know how to get started, or if they've gotten started, how to polish it, how to be the best writer that they want to be.
What if you have a child who loves to write, and your teachers, the child's teachers have told you that the child has exceptional ability in mm-hmm. their opinion, and you, proud parent that you are, hope he or she is a prodigy. would a child of that description fit in at the Writer's Loft?
We are not geared right now. I would say that probably if someone was very mature with regards to even late high school, I think that's probably as young as we would take them, simply because of the requirements and simply because of the structure of the program itself. What I would do, years ago, a lot of how we learned things was through an apprenticeship method. And for writers, we have this wonderful apprenticeship resource available to us, and that's the world of reading. When you are younger, if you are exposed to books, if you are exposed to great books and you are constantly reading, then you're being educated. Whether you know it or not, you start to learn what a plot is. You start to learn about structure. You may not know that's what it's called, but I remember being very young and reading To Kill a Mockingbird, and that impressed me so much. It's one of the reasons why I'm a writer now. And so I learned from that. So there are a lot of outlets out there for younger children, and a lot of resources out there. I don't think the Writer's Loft would probably be the primary source. Now, I will say this. We have looked at different types of camps for youth. And I wouldn't rule out that in the future, if we continue to grow and we continue to be able to expand, we might have something like that in the future.
Every once in a while, someone will grouse, usually in print, that television, computers, and text messaging have dumbed down the overall quality of our public discourse, including the quality of our writing, that there are no more Melvilles, no more Hemingways, no more Steinbecks, no more Joyce Carol Oates, for that matter. Do you agree or disagree?
Well, I think that as with most complex issues, I think there's room to agree and disagree. I do think that there is a segment of society who either has not been exposed to literature, or at least great literature, great arts, or there's an aspect of society who perhaps are distracted. I think we have so many distractions nowadays. With a good book, that's not something you can sit down with for 3 or 4 minutes. If you have a good book, if you have a Melville, you need to sit down for an hour and a half, and be still and allow yourself to be released into that world. There are still lots of people out there who allow themselves to experience that. There are a lot of talented writers out there nowadays, and it only takes a trip to the bookstore or perusing Amazon.com to see some really major works out there, and a lot of young people with exceptional work being produced nowadays. I think that there's so much competition in the marketplace in terms of such things you've expressed, media, video games, television, internet, that perhaps they seem to make up a smaller segment of the entertainment industry as opposed to 100 years ago, when you basically had fewer outlets for entertainment, and that was a major source. So there is a lot more competition nowadays. I couldn't argue with someone who presented data with regards to the lack of interest sometimes in great literature. But at the same time, at least in the circles in which I run, there's a lot of people out there that's their passion. So I'm not sure if that completely answered your question, but I'm still hopeful. I really am.
Mm-hmm. Can you help people with nonfiction as easily as you can with fiction?
Yes.
A work like, say, a historical book, that's something that needs to be truly well-researched.
Yeah, and nowadays, to be candid with you, from what I understand, it is easier to sell a relevant nonfiction book than it is to sell a work of fiction. And that is because people become more invested when they believe that something really happened. Now, with regard to the specific work, when you're writing a work of fiction, whether it be a short story or a novel, you are telling a story. What I tell my students who are in creative nonfiction is when you are writing your book, you are telling a story. The difference is you don't have as much latitude with the facts. You are to some degree restrained because events really did happen, and so you have to reflect those events accurately, but you still have to tell the story. And I can give you a whole list of facts, and if there's no story there, you may not have a book, but there are a lot of wonderful factual events that happen that are wonderful, tremendous stories, and the authors did wonderful jobs with them. You know, Truman Capote in Cold Blood. You know, there have just been so many. The Perfect Storm. I'm trying to think of
Tom Wolfe, The Right Stuff.
Yes. I mean, just one after the other after the other. So, and all of those are great stories. So, yes, we can help someone with nonfiction or creative nonfiction just as easily as we can with fiction, as long as they have a passion for writing.
And if you do have a passion for writing, the Writer's Loft is the name of the program. Go to www.mtsu.edu/theloft. The director is Terry Price. Thanks for being with us today, Terry.
Thank you, Jenna. It's my pleasure.
This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Join us again at this same time next Sunday. Check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And don't forget, we're also on iTunes.